Hello and welcome Hello and welcome to the July 17th edition of Speedway Digest Thursday Night Thunder. I'm your host, Adam Jason Sinclair, and tonight we'll be talking sports cars and late model racing. This week, our first guest is going to be sports car ace Brian Sellers. A decade motor racer, he got his start racing go-karts in 1993 at the age of 11. He quickly progressed up the ladder, beating Skip Barber, Formula Palmer Audi, Formula Ford, and Formula Atlantic, before making his move into sports cars in 2005. He also tested champ cars for both Newman Haas and Dale Coyne Racing. He's been with his current team, Team Falcon Tire, since 2009. But not at the track, he can often be found training, racing, and preparing HPI racing radio-controlled cars for fun and competition. Also working with top up-and-coming young drivers, as well as working with children's charities. He's married to television host Jamie Howe Sellers and lives in Brazelton, Georgia. Next week, he'll be competing at Indianapolis Motor Speedway, Team Falcon Tire Porsche, as well as the rest of the Continental Tire Series and the Tudor United Sports Car Challenge. It's been a busy week in motor racing. This past weekend was a little bit of controversy, as 72-year-old Morgan Shepherd had a little bit of an incident with Joey Logano. The incident was highly debated on both the internet and on television, and it has sparked lots of interest in the career of both Morgan Shepherd and Joey Logano. Shepherd is one of the older people in the garage, and there's been a lot of talk as to whether or not he has the right stuff to still compete in NASCAR. Later, we'll open up phone lines and get your opinion on whether or not you think the issue with Morgan Shepherd and Joey Logano had anything to do with age, or whether it had more to do with the preparation of the automobile and the budget of the teams. Next week, we're going to be discussing auto racing once again with the likes of top drivers in the Pirelli World Challenge. We'll also have our first related interview with the son of James Brown. Yes, that James Brown, the grandfather of soul himself. It should be an interesting discussion, and I'm looking forward to having him on the show. Before Brian comes on, let me briefly introduce our second guest for the evening, who'll be driver Joel Willman. Joel Willman has competed in all sorts of auto racing as well. More recently, he's been involved in NASCAR late model, and he also has a burgeoning truck series career. We'd now like to welcome Brian Sellers to the program, and thank you very much for coming on. Good evening, Brian. This is Adam Sinclair and Thursday Night Thunder. How are you doing?
I'm great, Adam. How are you? Thanks for having me.
Pretty good. Thank you very much for coming on. I have a few questions for you, and I'd like to open up for questions from my listeners, if that would be okay with you.
Yeah, that's great. Love to.
Okay. First off, why did you decide to become a race car driver?
That's an interesting question. I'm not sure that there's one answer to it. I mean, I think for me it was one of those things that I started racing karts when I was young, and from the very first time I drove, I knew it's what I wanted to do. It's it's like a drug. It's certainly something that's super addictive, and once it's in your blood system, it's hard to get out.
Cool. How was your race last weekend at Mosport Park in Canada? You still there? It appears we've lost Brian Sellers. Hopefully we'll be back with us shortly. Technical difficulties are not a good thing, especially on live radio. But Brian Sellers has been a very good supporter of my career. Myself, he and his public relations team have always been great when I've had questions and wanted information. Let's try this once again. Hello, Brian. How are you doing?
Hey, sorry about that. Somehow
no problem.
We ended up with a bad connection there. I think I got you better now, though.
Okay, that's good. How was the Mosport race last week?
It was a good race for us. I can't sit here and say that it was exactly what we wanted, but it was a good race. We definitely had some improvements over our last couple races. We showed some speed that we haven't had in the last couple, and we found some gains with the car, with the tire. But unfortunately, we just weren't able to kind of get it all to click together. It was a difficult race day. The conditions changed a lot from the beginning of the race to the end of the race, and that's one of the things that we've been struggling with right now is the ability of the tires to adapt in all types of conditions and heat ranges. So it was difficult for us, and it threw off our ideal strategy, but we still came out feeling okay about what we did.
How do you feel that the IMSA has dealt with the tire issue? I know there's been issues with other cars in the series as well.
I feel like they've done a pretty good job. I mean, they've had a lot of things that they've had to kind of go through and process. And one of the things that they could have done at the beginning of this year was go to one tire manufacturer for the whole series. And I feel like that would have been a disservice to the teams and to the manufacturers. And I think that by being able to open at least GTLM to two open tire manufacturers has been a good thing. It's allowed money to come into the series. It's allowed more and more manufacturers to showcase their talents. So I think that from that perspective, they've been very strong, and they've allowed everyone to kind of come in and compete.
Okay. How do you feel overall the new United Sports Car Racing Series has done so far this season?
I think it started off rough, which is probably no surprise to anybody who watches, but it's gotten better. And I think that what they've done is they've listened, which was one of my kind of things going in to make it successful, that they would have to listen. And they're trying to do that, and they're trying to take advice and feedback from the teams, from the drivers, and really trying the things they can address, they're really trying to address them. And so what I think you've seen is a big improvement over the last couple races in team happiness and relations with the series. So as a group, I think we still all have a long way to go. And it's not just the series, it's the teams and how they work with the series as well. But when you look at basically what's become a startup series from two separate series, I think it's gone fairly well.
Okay. What are your hopes for the 2014 season that you're having so far? What would your perfect season be, and how are you on the path to that right now?
Well, no, I mean, I think unless right now you're Corvette racing, you're probably not along along the path that you want to be. It's everyone's goal at this time in year to have won a race or two races and be leading the championship and kind of be sitting in the catbird seat and in control of your own destiny. But, you know, unfortunately, we're not in that position right now. So for us, the importance becomes on just finishes and performance alone. Everything else kind of doesn't matter. So I think, you know, our goals now will be to try and win a race, to try and make sure we kind of file another victory away for Falcon Tire. And it's going to be difficult. I mean, this year is harder than it's probably ever been. So there's going to be a lot of work ahead of us. But I think that, you know, we need to be able to do that to kind of come away feeling like we accomplished something.
What's your favorite racetrack of the ones that you compete on now and of just in overall?
I have a couple. I would say my three favorites would be Sebring, Watkins Glen, and Mid-Ohio.
Okay.
You know, I think they're just great kind of historic U.S. tracks. And you know, I really, really just – there's something about those three places of everywhere we go that are special to me.
Which one? I know you've had a rather successful career in the past. This year may not have reflected that quite as much. But which one of your wins is the most memorable?
I have to say, last year's Petit Le Mans win was huge. And I think it stands out maybe above the others because there was so much adversity with us heading into it. We came in on an old car that the team had to rebuild because our current model race car had been destroyed in Baltimore a couple races earlier. When we started the race, we were in adverse conditions, and we went down two laps early in the race, and we struggled our way back onto the lead lap and then into the lead on the lead lap. And once we got there, we were able to hold on to win the race. So it's the whole lead up to that particular race that makes it special.
What would be your idea of the perfect schedule for United Sports Car Racing?
I'd say we're not so far from it, to be honest, right now.
Okay.
I'd really like to see the addition of Mid-Ohio back, and I would also like to see somehow Infineon Raceway come back, Sonoma. I think those are two great tracks that have been left off the schedule. But, I mean, it's just so the issue is we have so many great racetracks and it's budget, you know, restricted to be able to add that many events. So
yeah.
I don't really want to take away any of the events we currently have to add more.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I would like long-term to see those two back on the schedule. And I'm also, you know, part and partial to street courses too. So it wouldn't hurt my feelings if we had more of those down the road.
Okay. What would be the best street course for the series that you're not at now?
Baltimore, but I say that with a little bit of a vested interest because we've been so successful there, and it's been a great city for our team, for Team Falcon Tire, and you know, we've been so successful there, and it kind of. It's one of those things that just breaks your heart a little bit not to be able to go back. But, you know, these things happen, right?
Yeah. How did you feel after winning the Continental Tire Sports Car Challenge race in Indianapolis last year, and do you think you'll be able to duplicate your success this coming weekend?
I hope so, because the podium in Indy is so special. Being able to stand up elevated over the track and be able to look down and see the people there is a pretty surreal feeling. And I realize it wasn't the 500, but still, in any case, as a U.S. driver, you dream of winning in Indy, no matter what it is and what series and what you're racing in. It's pretty overwhelming. And I'd love to be able to get the opportunity to do that again and to be able to do it with Falcon this year. And I think we have a chance. I think it'd be a track probably that suits us a little bit. So if we can, you know, dot our I's and cross our T's, maybe we'll be able to stand up there again.
I know you've tested in some Indy cars in the past. Do you have any plans in the future, or would you like to try to pursue a career in IndyCar at some point?
No,
maybe
I think
maybe
that.
Do a couple races here and there?
I wouldn't mind doing a couple races, a couple street course races, but I think, to be honest, maybe that ship sailed a little while ago. It was great, and it was a really fun time in my career to be able to do those things. But I think at the time, it was when the series was kind of crashing, and IRL and Champ Car were both struggling to kind of make ends meet, and in those cases, there were really no room for drivers. And so I made a choice to move away from that and to go into sports car racing, and it's probably been, to me, the best choice I've ever made. I love where I'm at. I love being able to be a part of sports car racing and to have the team atmosphere like we have here. So, yeah, I would love to do it, but for me, it's not really a bucket list item anymore like I think it used to be.
Okay. Do you see yourself ever moving up into the prototype series, or do you think that will ever be an option?
If it presented itself, I would love to drive a prototype, and if it was the right team and the right program. But I think what we have going in GTLM right now is a pretty special category. It's full of manufacturers, full of factory drivers, full of some of the best drivers in competition in the world. So the one thing I think I've tried to learn a little bit as I've started to get a little bit further into my career, a little bit older, a little bit wiser, is it's not necessarily what you're driving, but more who you're driving it against. And with that in mind, I'm happy to be where I am. And if I could stay there, I wouldn't feel like I've missed anything in my career.
How do you feel that the series has done with the balance of performance issues so far this season?
Well, fortunately, I think in our class they've done an okay job. It's a little bit unfair for me to probably comment on outside classes because I'm not involved enough to really know the ins and outs in the day-to-day.
Okay.
But I have to say, if I'm being honest, I think they've missed in some areas. There's no question, and I don't think that that's a secret to anybody there or anybody listening or watching. It's not an easy job to take X amount of cars and try and match them to the same speed. So there are definitely some things that need to be addressed, but I have faith that they'll figure it out. It's going to take time. It's not one of those things that's just going to happen overnight. So they still have some work to do, but they'll get there eventually.
Okay. At this point, I'd like to open it up for guests to call in if anybody would be interested. The phone number is 215-383-3681. Number again, 215-383-3681. How do you feel about the issues they've had with the GT series in that they've had some problems considering the difference in the GT Daytona and the GT Le Mans, where there's been a sort of a debate as to whether they're going to bring in the GT3 series and just amalgamate everybody into that? Do you think that would be a good idea?
Yeah, I mean, I do. I think it would be a good idea. And I think, this is me a little bit with on my high horse, I guess, and being able to say this because there's no repercussions. I'm not the one that has to make the decision and has to explain to everybody why they have to make money or spend more money. But I think it would have been a good thing to be able to just limit everybody to P2 cars and GT3 cars. And then all those cars can race everywhere else in the world. But what people have to understand is that's not the world we live in. And there are a lot of people and a lot of manufacturers with current race cars that don't allow them to do that. So I think it would be great. It would be great to be able to have a United GT3 series that could run anywhere. And same thing with prototypes. But I just don't know that it's logical. And I think that it's a good thing that someone like me wasn't in charge of the decision because I would have just pulled the trigger and let that happen. But then again, I probably wouldn't have too many people in the series because the budgets just don't allow for people to buy those types of cars at the drop of a dime.
Yeah. How do you feel about the fact that it seems like the there's not quite as many people showing up at the racetrack anymore. The grandstands are a little bit thinner than they used to be, and the TV ratings aren't quite as high as they were before. And what would you do to change that?
Yeah, that's difficult. Again, I hope that ratings aren't going down because people are becoming jaded with the series. I hope that's not the case. I hope I hope that people aren't losing faith in what we do, and because I still think that we have a good product, and we will put out a good product and a better product as the years go on. I don't know what I would do to change the television, because that's so far out of my realm of knowledge. But I think the whole thing with the races is that it needs to continue to be an event. Mm-hmm. And I think that the last couple races, we've done better at that. I do, in all honesty, think that Sebring jaded a lot of people, that when they watched Sebring and went to Sebring and they had a lot of full course cautions and not a lot of racing, that they've kind of said, well, why do I want to go to any more races? And I can't say that I blame them, but now what you've seen in the last couple races are actually really great racing and a lot of green flag racing. So I hope that starts to turn people back to our sport again.
I hope you're right. I think I was at the Sebring event, and it was interesting. It seemed like every time that they started moving, there was another caution, and then it was a long caution, and then there was a red flag, and there was another caution, and there was another caution. It just seemed like it went on and on and on, and it didn't. It was early on in the season, and the sanctioning body seemed like they were still trying to get their feet underneath them. So I think people should give them a little bit of credit, but the credit only goes so far.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah,
that's right.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, once again, I'd like to thank you for being on the show, and I look forward to covering your exploits for many years to come.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me. Have a great night.
Yeah, you too. Thank you. Once again, that was Brian Sellers of Team Falcon Tire, who competes in the Tudor Sports Car Championship Series. And now, I'd like to have a brief word from our first sponsor.
Get ready to relive the greatest rivalry in drag racing history. It's Don the Snake Prudhomme versus Tom the Mongoose McEwen, facing off in the feature film Snake and Mongoose. The movie stars all your favorite cars from the 60s and 70s and includes some spectacular scenes using vintage footage from the old glory days. Get it now on DVD and Blu-ray, or download directly to your electronic device. Available in stores, Redbox, at Amazon.com, or online at snakeandmongoosemovie.com/store.
Welcome back. My name is Adam Jason Sinclair, and you're listening to Thursday Night Thunder on the Speedway Digest Radio Network. In case you missed it, we just had Brian Sellers of the Team Falcon Tire of the IMSA Tudor United Sports Car Championship Series. Now, if possible, I'd like to get the phone lines buzzing with talk of one of the most serious crises to hit this sport, buying rides. The idea that drivers have to be able to bring money, in many cases a substantial amount of money, with them in order to even get a chance to compete has changed the sport, and not in a good way. If you'd like to, please call in now and share your thoughts on the subject at the number 215-383-3681. Also, if you'd like to discuss any other aspects of motorsports, I'd love to hear from you. Changing gears a bit, I'd like to welcome Joel Willman. Joel is a fourth-generation race car driver. He comes from a family, is in the Indianapolis Hall of Fame, the National Open Wheel and Sprint Car Hall of Fame, and the National Short Track Hall of Fame. Throughout his life, racing, military, and the outdoors have been a huge part. He started racing at age 9 in go-karts and worked his way up through the ranks of auto racing, driving many different types of race cars, from midgets, dirt and asphalt modifieds, NASCAR and super late models, to racing an ARCA car at Daytona. Joel's military life started at birth, being born in Fort Hood, Texas, where his father Kelly, an Army recruiter for the U.S. Army, and also drove on the first Army drag racing team. When Joel was 16, he entered the ROTC program and then enlisted in the U.S. Army National Guard in Indianapolis at age 70. This made him the fifth generation to serve our country in the armed forces. He's always been an outdoorsman, going hunting and fishing with his family. His grandfather, Clarence, was the biggest influence on him, becoming an avid bow hunter. He taught Joel how to hunt from the ground and use his surroundings to blend in. And this lesson helped have Joel bag his first buck at age 15. Since that time, Joel has shared his hunting passion with his children and was a hunter's education instructor for 3 years, teaching in the archery section. In 2010, Joel opened an indoor 3D archery range, continuing his passion for hunting. Now, at the age of 40, Joel has combined all three of his hobbies and passions into one mission, and that is his race to stop PTSD in our veterans through promoting his veteran network and racing, and getting his fellow veterans the ability to gain back the feeling of a team atmosphere and not being alone in fighting this disorder. For the last 7 years, Joel has been giving back by promoting a great veteran network of foundations and organizations that focus on taking veterans of all ages hunting and fishing. This has brought Joel together with the Dakota Whitetail Adventure for this season. Now I'd like to welcome Joel into the Thunderdome.
Oh.
Hey, Joel, how you doing?
I'm doing just fine. How are you?
Not too bad. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
First off, I'd like to ask you, how did you first get involved in auto racing? I'll probably cover that a little bit in your introduction.
Yeah, being born into a huge racing family, through my father, my grandfather, my aunts and uncles even raced. So, I mean, it's always been a part of our life one way or another, and it's just been a big opportunity for me.
What's your favorite racing memory?
My favorite racing memory, obviously, would have to probably be last winter when I did the ARCA test at Daytona and coming out and doing my very first lap at Daytona and actually kind of topping Austin Dillon's nationwide time. That was kind of the biggest thrill for me, and to actually see where we could fall down in the ranks. And after the weekend of testing, we were 38th out of 72 cars. So I think that was probably the highlight of my career.
That's pretty cool. Do you plan doing the ARCA test there in December this year?
Not this year, just because the way things are working out, and we got just so much other stuff going on with these veterans and trying to get them to go hunting and making sure that they're taken care of first. And we'll worry about next racing season come as soon as we get some marketing partners on board. Right now, it's very, very tough right now to get any type of marketing partner to follow you.
That's what my next question leads into. With the current economy, how difficult is it for drivers like yourself to market yourself to sponsors?
Marketing ourselves is always kind of like the easy part. It's just the hard part is actually having companies that have, that believe in it and, that they see that you're actually able to produce, results, and the end result is ROIs, return on their investments, and they want to make sure that, they're being seen by as many folks as possible and for as little cost as possible, too. So, it's kind of you have to juggle it a little bit and just really work hard and like I tell everybody, getting in the car and racing, that's the easy part. The hard part is not everything outside the track, doing marketing and PR work and making sure that, we get out and do radio shows like this and talk about our marketing partners that we have on board.
What's your favorite racetrack?
Oh, that's tough. I have to actually say my favorite racetrack to actually race on is back home. It's Indianapolis Raceway Park, which is now Lucas Oil Raceway. That's probably okay. one of my favorite tracks. Living here in Wisconsin, the Dells Motor Speedway is by far the fastest and best track that I actually like, just because it's close to home. It's you know, we're only 45 minutes away from the track, and we have a great, you know, great fan base there, and they always have great crowds and great car counts, so it works out really well.
After reading your bio, I noticed that you've had experience in the sports car ranks. Do you still follow the competition? If so, how do you feel the new management at Tudor is doing so far?
I have. I mean, when I worked on the IMSA series with Euro Motorsport Racing, we worked on the Ferrari 333 SP, and we had Jay Cochran as our driver, and I really liked that series. It was really, really cool to be a part of the Ferrari's first win when we won Road Atlanta in 1994. So it was a big honor to be a part of that. And, you know, I still follow the ranks and, you know, the whole race, you know, auto car racing, you know, 24 hours of Daytona and everything. And I think the Tudor series is, you know, when they're doing both series, it really helps out everybody, because when you kind of like, you know, if you don't, you kind of see what happened to Indy cars. I mean, when they split, you lost fans, and, you know, obviously that hurts car counts, because if you don't have fans that are seeing products, you know, and companies' names that, you know, need to be supported, and, you know, brand loyal fans, you know, it hurts everybody all the way around. And, you know, now that's kind of under one roof, and, you know, you see that everybody's getting more into it. I mean, prime example, look at, you know, the Formula One race at Houston. That was huge. You know, I mean, just everybody's getting along in the sports car world, and, you know, I love Road America, so it was pretty good to see them up there.
What are your goals for this season?
Well, this season right now is we're just doing as much marketing as we possibly can to get some larger marketing partners on board to kind of help us race the rest of the year. We're going to try running a few asphalt late model races and possibly looking to switch over to dirt late model racing for next year. I really like the dirt late model series. There's a lot of, you know, great fan base. The last dirt race here, dirt late model race here in Wisconsin at Plymouth, they just had like 3,800 fans. Like, I was, you know, in the stands. So that's quite a crowd when you can do that in front of everybody and have a good show. And, you know, sponsors love it because they're getting PR, and it just all comes, it's a big circle. And, you know, so that's what we're trying to do right now this year, is just trying to land enough marketing partners to kind of support us and try to get some couple asphalt late model races in, and, you know, maybe get some dirt racing in too.
Tell us more about the Race to Stop PTSD. How are you involved in the organization, and what exactly do they do?
Well, what I've created is a network where we go out and we promote, and we basically, you know, try to do everything we can to help give back to our veterans with PTSD and traumatic brain injury, TBI. So what we do is we get organizations such as the Dakota Whitetail Ventures. They came on board this year, and they're going to give away 5 hunts, you know, to 7 days, 7 nights, to a lucky veteran that's in the stands. All they got to do is just put their name in the jar and show that they have proof of, you know, ID that they're, you know, veteran or currently enlisted. And we pick them out and we send them out and go hunting, you know, and that's, it's huge. It's a huge thing for veterans to feel that, you know, especially men and women and their families to fight the PTSD. And that's what we do. And so we get hooked up with organizations like the Miss Lou Foundation down in Natchez, Mississippi, and we take veterans hunting and fishing just to have them get out, relax, clear their brain a little bit, and, you know, let them get around other veterans that are going through the same thing as they are. And then they start talking back and forth and kind of, you know, creating a bond. And before you know it, they got a good friendship and they keep in touch. And just that alone keeps these veterans going every day instead of to do the ultimate. I mean, every 9 minutes now, you know, it's kind of slowed down a little bit. Every 9 minutes, we're losing a veteran to suicide. So what we're trying to do is we're trying to hunt that down. And I say that, you know, punningly, with the veterans organizations that we take for hunting and fishing, is we're racing to stop PTSD and TBI and try to slow that down to, you know, more than that, because, you know, no one likes to lose a family member or a veteran. So,
what's your favorite racing memory?
My favorite racing memory would have to be walking out at the Indianapolis Raceway, at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, I should say, walking out and seeing 700,000 fans out there, you know, to get on the starting grid of the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, just because of the history of Indianapolis. It's such a great race. It's a huge race. It's a big event. That and, you know, my uncle Tony is in the Indianapolis Hall of Fame. I mean, he was Rookie of the Year in, you know, the early 30s and 40s, and, you know, he raced there seven
awesome.
Different times. And just to have that kind of peace of mind and piece of history. My uncle Tony raced there. My dad worked for Eldon Rasmussen on the IndyCar team, as well as Tony Bettenhausen. So he was mm-hmm. he's been in Indy, and then now I have, you know, working with Euro Motorsport Racing, worked with Darrell Walker for a little bit. So it was a great opportunity for me to be a part of that, and I'll never forget that.
What would be your ultimate job racing? What would be your ultimate goal?
My ultimate goal? Winning a major event, or making ARCA, getting an ARCA win, or even a Craftsman Truck Camping World Truck Series win. That would be the ultimate. I mean, that's just the ultimate dream. Everybody has that dream. Realistically, goals are to win major features and come home a champion.
There you go. How do you feel about the way that NASCAR has organized the chase this season? Do you think that will help out at all, or will it just make things a little more complicated?
You know, I think it's just going to open the doors for, you know, opportunities. I mean, we saw that last year where, you know, guys that, you know, they worked so hard to get just that one win, and it wasn't good enough. And now this year it's good enough, competition, we can see that it's stepping up every week. You know, it's not the same guys winning week in, week out. You know, I mean, Jimmy Johnson's been struggling this year. Jeff Gordon, you know, has had, you know, kind of a late run. And Tony Stewart, of all people, you know, I mean, he's usually got 3-4 wins in, and, you know, he's, you know, kind of struggling a little bit. And so, I mean, it's a great opportunity, I think, to open up the door for the NASCAR fans to give them a little bit. It definitely won't show anybody running away with it this year, so that's a good thing.
At this point, I'd like to open up for questions for Joel Willman. The phone number is 215-383-3681. If anybody has any questions, go ahead and give him a call now. I know you said you worked in Indianapolis. Your family has not a lot of history at the Speedway there. What's your favorite team in IndyCar?
That would have to be probably Andretti Green, just because of the history that Michael and Mario have had there, and, you know, even the letdowns. You know, I mean, everybody, they just Andretti is a name that you can't forget at Indy, and you pull for them every year. I mean, you really do. You pull for them guys every year to win, because, I mean, Penske's been on top for so long, and you know, Chip Ganassi as well, and You just kind of pull for that guy that's a little bit of an underdog, and you just want to see the Andretti's, you know, succeed and win as much as possible.
How do you feel about the double that Kurt Busch attempted this season? Did you pay much attention to that?
I did. I'm a huge respect for Kurt Busch at this time, just because, you know, for one, he's a fellow PTSD and military advocate, so that was a huge
mm-hmm.
honor. To kind of like be represented by him as well. But the thing is he's just such an athlete, and he showed his ability behind the wheel of a car to drive, and he did very well. I mean, he kept himself out of trouble and, you know, got to the halfway mark, and you just see him, you know, go faster, and he missed some really good wrecks and, you know, to keep himself in the contention, and he did very well. And I'm, you know, it just, and then the fly, you know, he had a good, really good run going at Charlotte, you know, on the backside of things, and until his motor blew up, but he was definitely coming up strong, and, you know, that's why Tony Stewart picked him, you know, to kind of drive us, because he has a lot of raw talent, and, you know, good, bad, or ugly with his attitude, and, you know, how he's, you know, in his past, but he's definitely coming around and showing, you know, he is a champion, and for a reason.
Yeah, that's how in my opinion, that's how most NASCAR drivers should be. They should actually have a little bit of emotion as opposed to just becoming the shills for corporate America, because corporate America has enough shills already.
That, yeah, I agree with that. You know, it's, but it is a political, you know, it is pretty political. You got to watch what you say and who you talk to and everything else. But I think it's a great opportunity for a lot of people to stand up and, you know, cheer for that, the gentleman that's, so you could say, the Dale Earnhardt feeling of it, because he's still getting by pretty well.
There you go. Well, I'd like to thank you very much for coming on the show this evening, and I wish you lots of luck in the future, and hopefully I can have you on in the future, and we can talk about your next adventure.
I greatly appreciate it, Adam, and thank you so much for having me on the show, and I look forward to doing it again.
Thank you. All right. Once again, I'd like to thank Joel Willman and Brian Sellers for coming on the program this week. This weekend, the NASCAR Sprint Cup Series is off, but the NASCAR Nationwide Series will be racing at prime time on Saturday night, July 19th, at the Chicagoland Speedway in Joliet, Illinois. ESPN2 will have a live telecast. NASCAR Countdown begins at 8 p.m., with the green flags flying at 8:44 p.m. for the 300-mile race on the 1.5-mile track. In other racing news, the NHRA Mellow Yellow Drag Racing Series begins its annual three-race swing through the western part of the country with the Mopar Mile High NHRA Nationals in Denver. And qualifying elimination actions will air on ESPN2 and ESPN3 from July 18th through the 20th. The IHRA will also be in competition this weekend, as well as the SCCA Pirelli World Challenge and IndyCar, which will both take us to the streets of Toronto. Next week, we're going to welcome a driver from the Pirelli World Challenge. We'll talk about the challenges of racing on the streets of Toronto, as well as some of the other issues that the Pirelli World Challenge has faced in the past season, and whether or not he believes that the Pirelli World Challenge is the future of GT3 racing. There is somewhat of a debate, as I brought up earlier with Brian Sellers, as to whether the GT3 will become the standard of the world, and that will become into the IMSA series. But it will be interesting to see how that works out. Once again, I'd like to open up the phone calls to discussion of motorsports. If you have any sponsor issues or any other questions you'd like to bring up, the phone number is 215-383-3681. Now I'd like to bring you a few more words from our sponsor.
Get ready to relive the greatest rivalry in drag racing history. It's Don the Snake Prudhomme versus Tom the Mongoose McEwen, facing off in the feature film Snake and Mongoose. The movie stars all your favorite cars from the 60s and 70s and includes some spectacular scenes using vintage footage from the old glory days. Get it now on DVD and Blu-ray or download directly to your electronic device. Available in stores, Redbox, at Amazon.com, or online at snakeandmongoosemovie.com/store.
Well, that concludes our broadcast for this week of the Speedway Digest Thursday Night Thunder. I'd like to thank both my guests and hope that you tune in next week when we'll be discussing the Pirelli World Challenge, as well as a little bit of discussion with James Brown's son, Daryl, which should be a very interesting discussion, I guarantee it. Good night, safe travels, and remember to keep your seatbelt fastened and both hands on the wheel.